You are listening to The Scroll, an audio book about Ecclesiastes written and read by Vance Neudorf. This is Chapter 3. Kohelet swept up his pen and immersed the tip into the ink. I, Kohelet, ruled over Israel and Jerusalem, and I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. Benjamin gave a soft grunt of affirmation as he slipped the bowl from the table. The door eased shut, and Kohelet read the sentence aloud to the empty room. His voice faltered as he realized anyone below the window might hear those words. As the chief collector and archivist of the king's library, he had indeed read more books than the king, for the ruler was often too busy with matters of state, building projects, and many wives, to reflect on the ancient texts. But the days of having the king's library at his fingertips were long gone. Now his entire library was housed in the cracked leather bucket that hung from an iron hook above his desk. Inside the bucket, safe from the rodents that scurried about the apartment at night, were three precious scrolls. Actually, two and a half, for much of the Genesis scroll had been burned away. Only Benjamin's quick reaction had saved it from a complete ruin, a noble act, but one with dire consequences. It was ironic that the ruined scroll was now in his possession, for it also had ruined his career as the king's chief librarian. The Kohelet, as he had been known then, was a title for someone who gathered together, and it was the job of those in the archives to collect and protect the wisdom of the ages. Scrolls and tablets arrived daily, and it was a massive task to catalog them all, decide which ones should be translated for the king's permanent collection, and store the others away until there is more time to assess their value. The charred end of the Genesis scrolls, wooden rollers, stuck out of the bucket like an invitation, but Kohelet had long since memorized every word of that fragile parchment, right up to the account of Abraham leaving his homeland, for that is where the blackened edges of the scroll now ended. Like many ancient scrolls, Genesis took its name from the opening word in the text, Bereshith, the beginning. For Kohelet, this scroll was the fountainhead of all wisdom. Like the rivers that flowed from the Garden of Eden, wisdom flowed from the creation of mankind. It was in the beginning that mankind had received the mandate to work the earth, to tend it, and to enjoy the fruits of their labors. From that point on, every human heart beat with the desire to make something from the earth, to grow food, carve a piece of wood, bring a fish to market, or press grapes into wine. Humanity had been intrinsically bound to the earth, but when mankind acquired the knowledge of both good and evil, God had responded by twisting the world beyond the capacity of the human race to repair it. The initial desire to work the earth now ran headlong into the reality of thorns and thistles that plagued all creation. Humans were trapped between working to move their affairs forward and yet finding problems constantly thwarting them. As a result, everyone was trying to use the earth's limited resources to compete with others, to climb higher and to make something of himself or herself. But life under the sun would never provide the satisfaction of getting ahead. As Kohelet leaned forward to touch his pen to ink, a sharp ache in his back pushed a low groan from his lips. It was a fitting sound for the words he now painstakingly scratched onto the vellum. What a frustrating task God has given to mankind. I have examined everything people work at under the sun, and it is all as futile as chasing the wind, for we could never straighten everything that is twisted, nor could we even begin to count all that is lacking. He gingerly eased back into his chair, and the morning breeze slipped through the open window and ruffled the edge of the scroll. Chasing after the wind had become his favorite metaphor for the futility of all work. Anyone who had spent even one summer in the scorching heat of the city could relate to this image. Going out into the hills to capture a cool breeze and bring it home was indeed as futile as going to work and expecting to gain something of lasting benefit. No one could deny that despite our best efforts, human achievement always ended up twisted and lacking. No sooner was something constructed than it required a continual commitment of time and energy just to keep it in a decent state of repair. Everyone understood that the thorns and thistles of a cursed earth were not just for those working the fields. Problems and shortages overran every human occupation. Even his chosen field of education was subject to this futility. He had devoted his entire life to the pursuit of knowledge, fully believing that he would come to a complete understanding of how the world worked if he just studied long and hard enough. All he had discovered, though, was just how little he actually knew for certain. By setting up knowledge as a goal unto itself, he had also set himself up for great disappointment. His relentless pursuit of knowledge had left him only with an overwhelming sense of being adrift in a world without a shred of certainty to guide him. That realization stuck to him like a twilight shadow, lengthening with each passing year. Even though I acquired more wisdom than anyone who had ever ruled in Jerusalem, when I applied myself to a complete understanding of wisdom and knowledge, I discovered that I too was chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow, and the more knowledge, the more grief. Grief. The anguish of that word flowed from his heart, through his cramped hand, and onto the scroll. People had inflicted terrible atrocities on others throughout the history of the world. The soil of the earth was drenched in the blood of the innocents. It was no wonder that the land constantly sprouted thorns and thistles. Angry voices echoed across the empty marketplace and pulled Qehelet from his thoughts. Caleb was shouting at his wife again and making a grand fuss. He was in a foul mood, for once again he had stayed up late into the night, drinking whatever someone else would pay for. Caleb was a man with more ideas than good sense. He desperately wanted to get rich, but every attempt at a new business failed, and he sought solace in his wine. Qehelet could relate to those feelings of failure and the need to bury those unpleasant feelings beneath more pleasurable distractions. His disillusionment with the pursuit of wisdom had prompted him to set aside his books and experience more of life pleasures. Stepping from the dim recesses of the library archives, he had turned his natural curiosity to exploring the social life of the court. He had cautiously approached the people and parties he had formerly viewed with disdain to investigate what they might provide. Much to his surprise, the courtiers welcomed him with open arms, for he was an interesting diversion from their normal social fare. He lent their parties an intellectual status, and he quickly became one of the most sought-after guests at events within the palace walls. A man of literature was in their midst, someone who could tell them of distant past and of new ideas from far-off lands. What they could not know was that he had never traveled more than 2 days' journey from Jerusalem. He had not even dipped one toe in the seas that brought him his precious scrolls and tablets. His experiment in palace life went to his head like the wine that flowed in the king's court. Women who had never even noticed him in the past, charming, passionate, beautiful women, sought him out. But the novelty faded as quickly as the effects of the wine, for he simply could not shut off his mind and follow the revelers down pathways that would never satisfy his quest. He could clearly see there was no lasting gain in the pursuit of pleasure, any more than there was in the pursuit of wisdom. His sense of alienation slowly returned, and he had already lost his taste for their parties and his daydreaming about his scrolls again when he had met Moriah. That event had opened the door to a potent new level of exploration into life's physical pleasures and also its agonizing heartaches. He pulled his thoughts from the past and found himself chewing on the tip of his pen, a bitter taste to go with even more bitter memories. He wiped the saliva on his sleeve. Moriah and their ill-fated relationship were best left out of this scroll, at least for now. A simple summary of those long, lost days, along with his conclusions, would suffice. As he wrote, the scratching of the pen on parchment felt like he was picking the scab from an old wound. So I decided to try pleasure to see what it might do for me. With wisdom as my guide, I tested the effects of wine and embraced folly, but that also proved unsuccessful. Pleasure, I said, is futile, for it cannot provide anything of lasting benefit. Lasting benefit spoke directly to the heart of the matter, for although the parties were enjoyable in the moment, they could not provide anything of value that would carry over into a new day. The pursuit of pleasure could not answer his question about what people could gain from all their labor. Joy was found in the journey, but pleasure failed as a destination. Those who chased after pleasure ground at a wheel that would spin endlessly until their lives were completely worn away. His investigation into the pleasures of life came to a complete end at the same time that the king announced a major building campaign at the palace. The library was to be moved to make room for a new bathhouse for the king's wives, and much to Daniel's irritation, Qehelet was given the task of designing and overseeing the building of the new library. His need to forget Moriah drove him forward, and he eagerly researched other great libraries while working with the craftsmen who would build according to his exact specifications. It was one of the most enjoyable times of his life. exchanging the world of clay tablets and parchment for stone blocks and timber, opened his eyes to the pleasure of creating something that had not existed before. The thrill of drawing a design and seeing it grow into a solid reality quickly became addictive. Sleep was a waste of precious planning time, and he greeted each morning with eager anticipation. He loved interacting with the creativity and the talent that others brought to their work. Through his conversations with the craftsmen working on a new library, he discovered that even for the laborer working for his daily bread, a pride of craftsmanship still went into shaping a stone, making a fishing net, or weaving a basket. For those higher up the social ladder, the creative drive turned to art or architecture, and the latest king was no exception. Since coming to the throne, the palace and the city had been awash in a constant flow of building projects. Monuments previous kings had erected in their own memory were torn down to make room for those commemorating the new king. Coelho chuckled. At times, the great leaders of the human race acted more like dogs marking their territory than noble rulers leading their people. Kings weren't the only ones pursuing a lasting legacy. A peasant's house may be humble, but it was also built in hopes of extending his influence beyond the span of a lifetime. All people realized that their days were quickly dwindling away as the shadow of death pushed them forward to make something of themselves while they were yet alive. I was determined to do something worthwhile with the few days of life I was granted on the earth, so I went to work on many great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I created gardens and parks full of fruit trees and dug wells so my orchards would flourish. I acquired male and female servants and had others who were born in my house. I owned more cattle and sheep than anyone in Jerusalem. I amassed silver and gold and collected royal treasures from far-off lands. I enjoyed music and the company of beautiful women. The king's life was the envy of the common folk. His great accomplishments gave him an uncommon hold over the hearts and minds of his subjects, for their lives seemed insignificant compared to their monarch. In an odd way, his success made them feel like they were part of something greater than themselves. Very few had ever set foot in the palace or in any of the other fine buildings scattered around the city, but that distance only added to the power of those feelings. If only they knew that even the king felt the same way they did after they completed a project. I became greater than anyone who had ever lived in Jerusalem. With wisdom at my side, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired and refused my heart no pleasure. Yet when I look back over all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, it was as futile as chasing after the wind, for I had gained nothing of lasting benefit under the sun. The only reward for all my labor was the joy my heart found while I was working. Coelho finished writing and pushed back from the scroll. People might find great joy within their work, but that satisfaction could not last. At the palace, a great celebration was held after a project was completed, but those enjoying the feast closed a door that could never be opened again. They could look back with fondness on what had been achieved, but the pleasure of working together on that particular task could not be lived again. When the sun rose the next day, a new project had to be found so they could once again enjoy the daily rewards of their efforts. A burst of noise from the plaza thrust through the window. A dog barked furiously and someone laughed and called out across the plaza. Eli's fruit cart had collapsed again, and Coelho could hear people telling Eli yet again that if he fixed it properly, this wouldn't keep happening. Coelho smiled at the familiar voices. He had been concentrating so hard on the task at hand that he had not even heard the market coming to life. It was time to embrace the new day, time to go down and earn his daily bread. There was satisfaction in finally writing down his thoughts, but friends were waiting. The scroll could dry in the sun until Benjamin returned to roll it up and store it again in the bucket. You have been listening to The Scroll, Chapter 3, a story of the writing of the book we now refer to as Ecclesiastes. You can discover more of Coelho's writings at artofwork.ca, bringing ancient wisdom to life.